I know that when Kim introduced me, she said I'd be talking about the changing role of the consumer in long-term care. And then as I was preparing the presentation, I actually changed the title to be Independent Living, the Changing Role of Consumers. And that's because, you know, there's even the term long-term care, that's what most people are familiar with, but there are some connotations in using the word care that are not really that accepted among people with disabilities who prefer to look at the issue of retaining their independence when they have disabilities. So the desire for independence is something that is universal. This is a great, you know, segue from the Generations United presentation because it's important to people of all ages. You've all seen toddlers struggling to walk on their own, teenagers rebel. I have one right now, so I know that firsthand. And adults, of course, want to choose where they'll live and where they'll work. So all of us want to be able to be in charge of our own lives as much as possible. But what happens then when disabilities, either early or late in life, threaten our independence and require us to rely on others for help? So just a few facts about disability in general. The vast majority of people do not require long-term assistance at any one time, but that said, most people will require some form of assistance at some point in their lives, whether for a limited duration or for a longer duration. So just in general, how many people need assistance in the United States today? There's about 10 million people who need help with activities of daily living. About two-thirds of these are people age 65 and older. The rest are either children or other adults who have disabilities. However, among this population, more than 8 in 10 do not live in nursing homes. Most are living in their own homes or in community-based settings, such as group homes or assisted living environments. So I sort of gave you the answer before I started, is this long-term care? Generally, we define long-term care as a personal care and assistance that an individual might receive on a long-term basis because of a disability, chronic condition, or illness that limits his or her ability to function. However, the term long-term services and supports generally is preferred because of the sort of paternalistic connotations with the word care and the connotation of dependency, which people find objectionable. So what is the independent living philosophy? Just in general, and this has really come from the disability rights movement that started out in California back really in the 70s mostly, is the idea that disability is not just an individual characteristic or a problem that an individual has, but more difficulty in the relationship between the individual and their entire environment. So, for example, you may have a physical disability, but if your community is accessible and you have curb cuts and so forth, you don't have to be disabled. And so this whole idea of making our physical surroundings, our family networks, the quality of health and supportive services that are available, and of course our public policies, which undergird all of these things. And as it was put by Judith Heumann, the co-founder of the World Institute on Disability, independent living is not doing things by yourself, it is being in control of how things are done. So it's a key. So I wanted to talk a little bit with that sort of background about the evolution of long-term services and supports in the United States. In the bad old days, which really aren't that long ago, as recently as 25 years ago, pretty much the only option, you know, if you were not being cared for at home was a nursing home. The Medicaid home and community-based services waivers had really just been enacted. They were really just a demonstration that was just beginning. Assisted living was virtually non-existent, and the only other community-based alternative were board and care homes, which generally were very poor quality alternatives for people who were nearly destitute and really didn't have family members who could take care of them. Their reputation was not highly regarded. However, in terms of just some trends in nursing homes, between 1994 and 2004, the population age 75 and older increased 23%, and so you might expect an increase in the nursing home population, but actually, over that same time period, the nursing home population decreased by 5%, and so this trend reflects not only consumers' preferences for where they want to receive services, but the growth of alternatives that are now available. And this is just, if you like, visuals. The top line shows what the projection was in terms of, from the early 70s until the, up to about 2000, what was anticipated to be the nursing home population, and then the dotted line shows the actual nursing home population. The characteristics of nursing home users today, actually, the majority of stays are for relatively short duration. These are people who are getting some rehabilitation in a nursing home after an acute stay in a hospital. So the older person who's had a broken hip, they might go into a rehab facility. So most of these nursing home stays actually are short stays. And among the people who are in nursing homes with longer stays, acuity levels have risen, so the people who are there really are the very most physically disabled people, and the prevalence of cognitive impairments is very high. Over half of the people, I think I heard actually from one of my colleagues in the Alzheimer's Association, I believe they estimate that even as high, perhaps as 70% of people in nursing homes have some form of cognitive impairment. So only 5% of people will ever use nursing homes for more than 5 years after turning 65. 8% will use 2 to 5 years of nursing home care. So sometimes, this is one of my pet peeves, people who are trying to sell long-term care insurance use a general statistic that says something like two-thirds of people over 65 will need nursing home care at some time. And if you drill down and look at it, many of them are these short stays that actually are covered by Medicare, which isn't to say that people shouldn't plan for long-term care. They should. But the number of people who actually have that kind of financially devastating long stay in the nursing home are, a more limited population. So the movement toward home and community-based services, as I mentioned, it's very important to people to retain independence as they age, as they develop disabilities. AARP has done surveys of people age 50-plus with disabilities, and what we found, not surprisingly, 9 in 10 strongly prefer independent living in their own homes to any other alternatives. People want more direct control over what services they receive and when they receive them. And this, I have a little footnote here. If you're interested in that study that was done, you can always link to it and download it. It's a pretty thick report, but it was really one of the few surveys that actually was done of people who actually have disabilities and not just asking in general older people what are your preferences. So I did mention Medicaid a little bit. Unfortunately, Medicaid still is the primary source of financing for long-term care in the United States. Historically, Medicaid's funding has favored nursing homes, but as consumers have begun to demand more home and community-based services, a number of years ago, the Supreme Court Olmstead decision said that people have the right to the least restrictive setting. So this, again, helped to encourage the development of home and community-based services. And then there have been some federal initiatives that have followed along in the aftermath of Olmstead to call for rebalancing the Medicaid program to promote more home care services. So where is the nation in terms of, and the Medicaid program, in terms of this rebalancing? So in 2006, which is the latest figure that we have, spending for home and community-based services rose to 39% of total Medicaid long-term services and support spending. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you compare to just 10 years prior in 1996, it was just 21% of the total long-term services funding. So in 10 years, that's really almost doubling on a percentage basis. So even though we certainly like to see the progress be going more rapidly, nevertheless, it is many states are making very steady progress. Many states, because the variation from state to state, as I'm sure you all know, Medicaid is a program where states have a lot of choices in terms of how they design their program, and so there is enormous variation. There are some states that still probably have, you know, only 10% of their long-term services funding going to home community-based services. However, there are 9 states who are now spending more than 50% of their Medicaid long-term services dollars on home community-based care. So it proves that it can be done if a state has the will and the initiative to do so. So this is just a visual for 2006 of the $99 billion spent by the Medicaid program for long-term services and supports. Almost half is going to nursing homes, another, the turquoise 13%, intermediate care facilities for people with mental retardation, and then we have this 26%, which is the home and community-based waiver program, 9% to what's called a personal care option, and 4% for the Medicaid home health program. And those three segments together are what went into the figure for home and community-based services. It's not a perfect measure. Some home health care is not long-term services and supports, but it's the best measure that we have. So even once you get into the whole concept of providing home and community-based services for people with disabilities, when these models were first being developed in the early 1980s, the traditional service delivery model was to use a home care agency. And the person went through a care manager, many of them social workers, not all, but many of them social workers, and the care manager was kind of a gatekeeper who determined, you know, what someone's needs were, what services they were eligible for, and then would give them a choice of perhaps several different home care agencies that they could choose from to deliver the services. The role of the consumer really was fairly limited. However, with the roots of the independence movement, the disability rights movement, which really started primarily among adults with physical disabilities who said, you know, you're treating us like children, we can make our own decisions, we don't need a care manager to tell us, you know, how we need to have, you know, somebody help us with the bathroom or help us get dressed and so forth. That part of the roots of the movement also was the deinstitutionalization of people with chronic mental illness, and we're hoping today that we can learn some lessons on how to do it better, which is not just to take people, and you've seen this, I'm sure you've all probably seen some of the TV things where they take the person, you know, from the nursing home and drop them off at the homeless shelter because they don't want to take care of them anymore. So, you know, we're trying to do it better, we hope. And also there has been a lot of advocacy by parents of children with mental retardation and developmental disabilities, and they actually have moved much more rapidly among that population in getting children out of these facilities and caring for them at home. So the spread to of this movement to older people has been much slower, and a lot of it has to do with assumptions that older people didn't want to be bothered with trying to find their own home care provider, and they'd much rather have somebody else, you know, manage their services for them. And some of it really was a paternalism about, you know, about older people in general, and really not understanding that you know, unless they are, you know, in a situation where they're severely cognitive impaired, that they are able to express their preferences and you know, take care of things with more autonomy. There also historically were a lot of concerns about safety and abuse. Those of you who are familiar with the Medicaid program and the home and community-based services, there is a provision that says that they have to be delivered in a safe environment. And this, over the years, has sometimes caused some conflict between social workers who want to do the right thing for their elderly clients, but who also, you know, have concerns sometimes if they go into the home and they see that the laundry is piled up and maybe there's, you know, infestations of creatures that we don't normally like to cohabitate with and so forth, and say, this person can't live safely on their own. Look at their home. Whereas that person might say, you know what? I don't care. up the dirty laundries on the floor. I'd rather be here than be in a nursing home. So some of the drivers of change have been increasing advocacy by older people, by groups like AARP, and I'm sure Generations United and others, the Olmsted decision, the fact that the cost of nursing homes is putting a pretty severe dent in the Medicaid program's resources, and that people often can be served at a much lower cost in the community, the fact that there are shortages in the long-term care workforce, and to send people through agencies, these home care agencies have been having a hard time finding an adequate number of workers, especially since they don't always pay the best wages. And so this has led to a lot of people saying, you know, I have a neighbor, I have a friend, I have a family member that would be happy to provide these services. Why can't I use that person instead of going through an agency? And then, like I said, changing perceptions about the abilities of older people with disabilities. So this has led to what's called a consumer direction movement, and it represents a philosophical approach to service delivery that tries to maximize consumers' abilities to assess their own needs, to determine how and by whom they're met, and for the consumer to determine what constitutes quality. And this is a really important issue, because sometimes you might get someone coming into the home and saying, you know, sort of the things I said before, the home looks dirty, there's dirty dishes, but it's more important, you know, in many ways to really ask the consumer, what is important to you? Is it more important, and this has been sort of the debate, some people will say, you know, you can have, you know, a trained nurse aide or whatever who comes in, and especially with a lot of the personal care services, they're very intimate in nature, and when you have someone who's bathing you, who's helping you use the bathroom, who's feeding you, if you have someone who comes in who's just very officious and, you know, this is how it's done and this is how I'm going to do it, and the person might be very unhappy with that, and they might have somebody else who maybe doesn't have the training, but they're comfortable with this person, they've worked out their routines, they've worked out the time of day that works for them, and so, you know, the idea is to have the consumer's feelings be a component in determining what constitutes quality. So what some of these programs look like in terms of consumer choices, there are a growing number of programs, both in the Medicaid program and outside of the Medicaid program, that are working to provide more choices for consumers, and they can be choosing which services they receive, the days and times for service delivery. Very often when you're working with a home care agency, they will say, we can send a worker between 3 and 5 in the afternoon, or we can send a worker, you know, at a particular time, which may not meet that person's needs. Or, you know, maybe they say we can come at 7 a.m. Well, maybe this person likes to sleep in and doesn't want their worker to come at 7 a.m. So people can often work out, you know, more flexible arrangements on their own. Again, they can, in many programs, have the choice of hiring, managing, and terminating workers, including, in many cases, family members. And this is something that really has changed a lot in the Medicaid program. There are programs now where, in some cases, even a spouse can be actually paid for providing services. And then often they can manage their budget. So the Medicaid agency or the, you know, the they may still have a care manager, but that care manager may be more in the role of saying, you know, we've assessed your needs and your monthly budget is, you know, whatever, whether it's $500 or $2,000. But then the individual, in many cases, has the option to manage that budget by determining the wages for their provider, or they can sometimes save some of their budget to buy something that might help them with their independence, like a home modification or various assistive devices. So AARP has looked at, again, some of these issues about people's preferences, people with disabilities' preferences for managing their own care. And what we found was that 76% of people age 50 and older would, in fact, prefer to manage their own home care services rather than receive services managed by an agency. And among people 50 and older with disabilities, only 15% said that they would prefer agency-directed services. And here's a visual. So In the survey instrument, we had several options that people could choose, and you can see more than half said their preference would be to get the money, to manage and pay the workers. 25% said that they'd like to manage the workers, but they prefer that the agency get the actual money and take care of paying the workers. And in fact, in most of the models that are out there, the consumer actually does not manage the payroll. They have what they call a fiscal agent who can take care of some of those functions. And then 15%, as I mentioned, said that they would prefer that the agency gets the money and manages. 7%, we're not sure. So there is one survey that was done. It's a little bit old, a couple years old, but this looked specifically at consumer-directed programs for serving older people. There were 40 states responding, 62 programs serving 70,000 persons, and this shows the types of services that were provided through those programs. So you can see nearly all of the programs were providing personal care and homemaker services. About half provided things like home modifications, assistive technology, respite. 5 minutes, okay. I'm almost there. A few provided some other things like home rehab, skilled care, caregiver support. And then in terms of the types of choices that consumers have, you can see nearly all the consumer can determine how the tasks are done. Most of them can choose the agency. They can control the schedule. They can select individual workers in most cases who don't have to be from an agency. They can determine which services they get in most cases. Most also can allow friends or neighbors as providers, and quite a few, almost 80%, will allow family members as providers. Satisfaction with these programs is very high. In the survey that was done by the survey that I mentioned, 78% of state aging directors said that their older consumers were very satisfied with consumer-directed services. And then there's one particular model, which you may have heard of, called Cash and Counseling. This was started in 3 states with, in part, a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and that's been expanded and is now building in a total of 15 states. And for their early states, for those first 3 states, they had a very rigorous evaluation methodology. And what they found is that, so they had a control group, with people who were receiving the cash and counseling and people who were receiving the regular agency-directed services. And compared to the agency folks, the consumer-directed people expressed greater satisfaction with services, higher quality of life, fewer unmet needs, and they indicated they were, in fact, receiving more care. And they did not find any evidence of abuse. People have always been concerned if people, get their hands on the actual money, that, children will, say they're providing care and, in fact, they'll steal the money and so forth. But they found really no evidence at all of abuse. So I know I've been sort of motor-mouthing and speaking really quickly, but I wanted to conclude just with a few bullet points of AARP's overall vision for, and I do have long-term care here, fix that, but for reform of the system is, first of all, give people choices to live at home, end Medicaid's institutional bias, expand options for consumer-directed services, help those who help others by supporting family caregivers. I know that Jaya mentioned a little bit about the role of family caregivers, and just as an aside, AARP, the Public Policy Institute, very recently, earlier this year, published a paper where we showed that if you estimate the economic value of the services being provided by family caregivers, it's $350 billion a year, which is larger than everything being paid out by the entire Medicaid program. So those caregivers need some help. Develop a system that helps everyone. We believe that a universal long-term care program based on principles of social insurance is desirable, and that cash benefits for people offer maximum flexibility. We do believe that there needs to be more public education, and personal planning and responsibility are important. Private insurance can enhance benefits, but most people can't afford that. But for those who do choose to to protect themselves that way. There needs to be better regulation to make private insurance more